We're here with Councilman Don Knight, who is running for re-election in Colorado Springs City Council District 1. And just as sort of a little bit of an introduction, why don't you tell us just a little bit briefly about yourself?
Okay. Well, as you said, I'm Don Knight. I'm current City Council resident for District 1, have been for 4 years. Background is I come from a military family, three generations. My dad served. My wife and I both served. All three of our kids are serving. And our two daughters, their two husbands have served or are serving. So that's the background. We moved here in 1990, then went away from 92 to 96 for a couple Air Force assignments. We came back to our same Rock Rimmon home and been here ever since. So after my 26-year Air Force career, did 10 years in the defense industry here in town, doing both business development and satellite system engineering. Go to St. Francis Catholic Church. Live in the Rock Rimmon area. I think I said that. Yeah, we go to St. Francis Catholic Church. I've been a Eucharistic minister, proclaimer, member of the Knights of Columbus. Been a soccer coach, a Boy Scout leader. Trying to volunteer and help out the community wherever I could.
So why run for re-election?
When I ran 4 years ago, I thought I could bring value added. I think I did things in some areas. We can talk about a little bit later what I think my key accomplishments are. But there are some things that are still I'm in the middle of, and I'd like to finish up. And then some things in the next 4 years I'd like to tackle. I mean, we are limited to 2 terms. So it was a decision. Do I leave? Have I done everything I think I needed to do? And should I give somebody else a chance? Or is there other stuff I need to do? And there are some things I'm working on that I think will bring value added to the city that I would like to see through. And that's why I'm running for re-election.
What? Let's just go right there. What are those key accomplishments? And what are those things that that you do want to see through?
Well, the key accomplishments. As I said, I have a military background. The military is a strong part of our economy. It's, I believe, 47%, well over 40% of our economy. I think it's 47. There is going to be a what we call a BRAC, a base realignment and closure coming. And it's going to be a challenge for us to keep Fort Carson, but it's also going to be an opportunity for us to grow in new missions that we can bring here out to the Air Force bases. So to be prepared to really, as a community, to address BRAC takes about 2 years of planning ahead of time. And so that's one of the issues that accomplishment I did, I've already started back on October 12th. We brought in some representatives from Pentagon, from our local bases, and from utilities, and bases all have a new need to be energy resilient, which means if the grid goes down, either by terrorists or natural disaster, they can still operate for, X amount of days, let's just say 30 days. How can CSU help them become energy resilient, Colorado Springs Utilities? And so we've worked on that. We made it a formal community partnership with that, and that's really going to help protect us and strengthen our case when we go to the Pentagon and say, you need to keep Fort Carson open, or you need to bring this mission here because our bases have the energy resiliency when you have that partnership. So that's one of the things I did. I championed on that. Now, I don't know how some of your listeners will handle this, but I do not believe that recreational marijuana is good for our cities. And so I led the charge that we put ordinance in places, it's been 11 months this week, to outlaw recreational marijuana consumption clubs. Now, when council approved that back in April of 2014, it was under the model that it was a bring your own. And that was Club A64 downtown here. They converted, and all the other clubs that opened up turned out to be, they were selling it, which was against city regs, because we had, in summer of 2013, we had opted out of allowing recreational marijuana sales, testing, manufactured and approved products, and the growth in our city, which was allowed to us under Amendment 64. and we opted out of that. And so now that you had the clubs that were selling it under the guise of reimbursement, that was just going against our laws. And so we had to turn around and say the clubs are no longer allowed. Now, the existing ones that did apply for a license are going to have 8 years to phase out. But that's the thing. And then the other thing I've been working on and still have a long way to go is make sure that we keep our utility rates low. We'll be seeing voting on tomorrow in city council to lower the electric cost adjustment, which is a pass-through cost that we pay for whatever the fuel is. CSU is a nonprofit, and so whatever we get charged for fuel, we charge that. When prices go down, we lower our rates. When prices go up, we raise them. And I fought in January to lower them on the 1st of February, being a little bit proactive because we knew gas prices were going down. I lost that on a 4-5 vote on council. So now tomorrow, we're going to be in a reactive mode because the prices did go down, and so we're going to be lowering the rates. But I think we can be a little bit more proactive, and that's another thing that I fought for before and I want to keep going.
How would you characterize your district?
My district is on the northwest side of town. So we go from the south fence of the Air Force Academy down to Fillmore, Fontenero, includes Pleasant Valley. But I got Mountain Shadows, Peregrine, Rock Rimmon area, Holland Park. I have Cedar Heights. And then I also have some areas west of, east of I-25, so basically Dublin, up to about Union. And then when we get down to Vickers, it goes on out to goes out a little bit to east of Union to Vickers, down to Montebello. So it's mainly residential. We do have some good commercial area, University Village, Colorado, in North Nevada, where the Costco, Kohl's, a lot of stores have come in. That has been a great plus. We got University of Colorado, UCCS, University of Colorado Springs is in my district. Then we have, but we got areas where once was thriving, that manufacturing can come back in now, Garden of the Gods Corridor. We used to have Intel, MCI, all that. That's an area I'd like to see. We retain the businesses that we have there. We do have some pretty good gyms that are just off of Garden of the Gods. But, you know, that corridor there is really prime for growth again. And so I'd like to attract new businesses into there.
And who would you say are the core constituencies in your district?
When you look to be voters, when you look at the actual voters, it's people that live there. I'm probably an older generation being on that side of town. My house was built in the 70s. Some of the houses on the east side of I-25 are even older than that. We do have some new ones up in Peregrine Mountain Shadows. But overall, I think it's a little bit older population. But it's interesting. We do vote more. In the 2013 election, when I was first elected, District 1 had more votes cast than any of the other districts.
And what do you think are the biggest issues facing, let's start with facing your district first?
Well, again, I think all over the city, it's economic growth. How do we bring businesses in? For our district, the area that needs the most improvement is North Nevada Avenue from Fillmore up to the campus, Garden of the Gods. So University Village, Colorado was great. Really turned the place around. That was North Nevada right next to the freeway. Now we got to look a little bit further south than where the dog track is, the old Kmart that was there. And so I co-chaired my first couple of years on council. I co-chaired a task force that came up with recommendations on how to best renew that area. The mayor put a vibrant young lady, Nina Vetter, on city staff in charge. She got some contractors to help her out, and now we have the Renew North Nevada Master Plan that is going to be briefed to council this afternoon, and hopefully we vote to approve it in 2 weeks. And that's going to set the stage for really bringing back that part of of the area.
So the economic growth, and you may have just answered this, but do you see that as being the biggest issue facing the city as a whole, or just in part of your district?
No, it's facing the whole. Our economy, and in my Air Force and defense industry career, I've had over 20 years of dealing with government budgets. And so I chair the budget committee on both the city side for council and on utility side. Council also sit as utilities board of directors, and we got a finance committee on that side also. I chair them both, given my background. For the city, we have more needs than we have money coming in. I think every city has that, but we have some very valid needs. So there's two ways to grow our revenue. One is to raise taxes, which I'm not for, and the other one is to grow our economy. So the more businesses we go in, the more revenue we'll bring into the city, the more we'll be able to handle. So I'm retaining our current businesses. Said I did business development in my 10 years in the industry. First thing you got to do is protect your base. So we want to make sure that we first focus on keeping the companies that are here, find out why they're doing that, if they're having problems, how can we help them. They are what used to be the Regional Business Alliance, now the Chamber and the EDC. I mean, that's one of the things they do, go and they go around and they talk to businesses. When there's an issue that the council can help with, they report back to us. Usually it's on the utility side. Sometimes it's by an ordinance. First thing, we got to retain the businesses we have here. Then we got to attract new businesses. So, again, talking card to the gods, for example, one of the things we did in the last 4 years on council, we created a commercial aeronautical zone around the airport. This gives tax breaks to any aircraft businesses that are right next to the airport. They don't have to pay the sales tax when they buy inventory for whatever they're manufacturing. You got to be right around the airport. That was predicted to bring anywhere from 200 to 600 jobs, high-paying jobs, into the city. It's brought in over 2,000 jobs. What I've been pushing for, had to take a little break while we lost our old airport director, but now that we have a new one, I'll be reinvigorating that. I want to make the entire city a commercial aeronautical zone, so that people can locate on Garden of the Gods corridor that does some sort of aircraft manufacturing and get that same tax break that they're getting if they were right next to the runway.
Talk a little bit about taxes here, which is you just said that you're not interested in raising taxes, but some might suggest that we have maybe an imbalance between sales and property tax that ebbs and flows with the economy. And I'm just wondering how you feel about the balance between the sales and property tax, and if there's anything more that can be done to help raise the revenue of the city's coffers.
Yeah. First off, you really have two questions there. So let's talk about the balance of our revenue. It is a very unhealthy balance. We are so dependent on sales tax. Our revenue tax is 4.279 mils. So I just got my tax bill in January for my property. Again, you know, older home built in 75 in the Rock Rimmon area. Taxes, the total property tax bill was about a little over $2,000. I think only it was $113 or $117 of that is going to the city. So we have very, very low property taxes for the city itself. And then, of course, you know, we have on the sales tax, we got the 2%. We got the 0.1 tops, 0.4% public safety sales tax, and now the 0.62% issue 2C road tax. So we're getting, you know, we're getting revenue in, but unfortunately, sales tax is very volatile to economy. So when people stop spending, the revenue stops coming in. Property tax, you know, your property is only reassessed every 2 years. And so we really need more of a balance between property and city tax revenue so that we can ride out recessions not have to take all the draconian actions like we did from 2008 to 2010. I've been talking to financial experts. One person talked about potentially revamping our taxes and moving some of the sales tax over to property tax. That's going to be a hard sell for the voters, but I think it's the right thing to do. And that's one of the things I'm going to be further investigating in my second term is how do we do that? Now, for turning around then, raising taxes in general, no. I don't support that. I think we have enough. I did support the 2C, which is our road tax. It's 0.62%. It's for 5 years. That five-year period is not going to be enough to get everything we've done. It's not going to repave the street in front of your house. We are going to have to extend that. And so in 2020, I'll be very supportive again of raising the sales tax or renewing that sales tax for another 5 years. Hopefully, we can lower it down from 0.62 to 0.5. But, you know, we're going to have to renew that, and I'm going to be very supportive of that. So since we raise taxes for one problem, the other problems then, I think it's incumbent upon city government to fund everything else in-house. The biggest infrastructure backlog we have is stormwater. And we have an IGA, intergovernmental agreement with Pueblo, that is requiring us to spend $100 million over a five-year period from 2016 to 2020. Some people have said, Council, you ought to bring back the stormwater fee. It's within our power to do that without a vote of the people. I'm not in favor of that at all. It's still a tax by any other name. Tabor says you can't raise taxes without going to the vote of people. And the people, we've asked them twice. They said no. And they even said no when a previous council had put in that stormwater fee with issue 300. So I think it's very clear the voters have spoken. They want us to, you know, operate with inside our budget unless it's very, very critical. So I think we can do that. Now, I am supportive. There's going to be an initiative on the ballot for us to be able to keep up to $6 million in both 16 and 17. 16 surplus, we know it's about $10 million, and we're asking to keep $6 million of that. If there's any surplus in 17, we'd like to keep up to $6 million of that also. You know, that's money. If it hadn't been for the recession, that's money we would have been allowed to keep anyway, because Tabor, with inside the Tabor limits, if we had not had to ratchet down during the recession. And I'm supportive of Tabor, but that is a flaw in Tabor, is that you don't recover as fast from a recession. You're not allowed to recover as fast as you're penalized when you go into a recession. And we hadn't had that recession, that money we wouldn't even have to ask the voters. But that $12 million, if we can keep that, that'll help us meet our stormwater obligations without raising taxes and put a permanent tax in place.
So just to clarify, you are in favor of the Tabor retention?
I am in favor of the Tabor retention. So all three ballot initiatives I'm in favor of. So we have the Tabor retention. We have raising the requirement to sell utilities. From right now, charter says you got to have a simple majority, so 50% plus one. People have in the past said we need to sell utilities, which is really only the electric and gas part of it. Water and wastewater is still a government function. but we would get this one nice big check that would really help our city revenue. But the turnaround is the increase in our electric bill, the increase in our gas bill would more than offset to the ratepayers would be paying a lot more than what the city would get in there in taxes. And there's stuff that an IOU, independently owned utility, would not do for the city that we are doing for the city in the way of economic development. CSU does a lot of good in bringing companies in because we have low rates. So we got to keep it citizen owned. And so we have the ballot initiative raise it to 60%. And I'm very supportive of that. The third one is broadband. There was a Senate bill 152 several years back that said the city cannot compete in the broadband industry. I think competition ought to be open. If the government can provide it cheaper and better, we should be able to have a crack at it. We should not be barred from it. But overall, government competing with industry, I have a heartburn with. But if industry cannot do it or will not do it because of economic reasons, You know, and in today's day and age, citizens need broadband. You know, that's almost a vital economy. So what 152 will do is just allow the city to be able to go into it if the business case closes. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't see that business case closing, but I don't want to have that restriction on us if it comes in the future.
Mm-hmm. You touched upon this a little bit, and what do you propose to be done about the ratchet effect of Tabor in terms of being able to recover from a recession quickly?
Well, we have city Tabor laws and we have state Tabor laws. And you really doesn't work for council just to change the city Tabor laws if we're going to fall under the state one. So the first move is really with our state legislative things. And so, you know, council does meet with our legislative branch, both council and the mayor. We do meet with the folks from the Colorado Springs area that represent us up in Denver. And we talk about that as being an initiative. Also on the state side, there are things that are included in their Tabor that doesn't make sense. The hospital provider fee on the state side is a way of helping fund hospitals and doctors in the rural areas. But the income that we get from those hospitals paying that fee, or hospitals paying that fee, counts towards our Tabor tax, our cap, and that doesn't make sense. You know, in last year at the ballot, we asked the citizens to keep $2 million in Tabor excess for fixing trails and some park systems that were hurt by the floods. The reason that we exceeded the Tabor limits was because of state grants that we got because of the storms and because of the fires. But that was grant money in to fix damages, but that counted towards our Tabor cap. So fixing the formulas, the principle is good. We do need to fix the formula.
So Mayor John Suthers, he consistently brings up that Colorado Springs is the 40th biggest city in the country, and that we need to act like it. He has said that on occasion as well. What does that mean to you, to act like the 40th biggest city in the country?
That has different meanings for different people. For me, I kind of like the fact that we still consider ourselves a small town. I like it that we are not Denver. You know, it has some of its drawbacks. You know, all three of my kids went to Rock Rimmon Elementary, Eagle View Middle School, Air Academy High School. None of them went to college here. Mm-hmm. But they all want to move back here once they start having families. And I think you'll see that anywhere. You know, young kids, when they get out, they want to go out and see a different part of the country. But the fact that we are still a little bit of a small town. You know, my kids say, Mom, Dad, you can't sell the house. We want it. You know, that's where we want to come back and grow in there. So while the mayor says that, I kind of like the fact that we're still a little bit of a small town. But there's some areas. One of the things that he's pushing for is a 311 service, which is basically a call in a city phone book. If you have a car parked in front of your driveway or that's been there for 48 hours that's parked in front of your house, who do I call to get a tag, to get a towed, to get a move? What are the rules? I don't know who to call. You call 311. They will direct you to that. But the way that is to be funded, and the mayor said, you know, that is, you know, just about every other city has that. But the way that's to be funded is to raise the cable franchise fee. Right now, if you get Comcast, which most people do that have cable, or CenturyLink or Falcon Broadband, you're paying $1.53 cable franchise fee. Go look. It's on your bill. It's a separate line right there. The mayor wants to raise that to the max limit allowed by the state, which is 5%, which, depending on how much cable you get, could be anywhere from $5 all the way up to $7.50 on your bill. He wants council to do that as part of the new Comcast contract. To me, again, that's raising taxes. And you're asking only those few people that pay a cable bill to pay 311 for the entire city. You look at today's day and age, and I got a lot of people that write back to me when this after this made the press. You know, I don't call. I go on Google. You know, I go to my phone. I look up the phone number on Google, on the web somehow, and I wouldn't be calling anybody. But it's still a tax without going back to the citizens. You know, and there might be a time that we have to come in and do that, especially in public safety. You know, our cops and our firemen right now, their salaries, even adjusted for Colorado Springs, are about 5% lower than the national average. And so we are not attracting cops into the recruitment area. That's an area that we're short. I don't know the actual billet number, but the police department was, and their salary budget was $1 million short last year because they didn't have those billets filled. So they saved the city some money, $1 million, but it's a good news, bad news. It means that there's those cops that we already had the billets for, we already had the money for, but we just didn't have them employed because we have a recruitment problem of not being able to do that. So we need to act in a big city and paying our public servants, especially our public safety servants, a competitive wage to keep them here.
On the topic of public safety, District 1, of course, is the district that was most affected during the Waldo Canyon fire.
Right.
And at the time, the fire chief said that Colorado Springs is the number one at-risk city in the country for wildfires because of the wildland-urban interface. And I'm wondering if you think the city is doing enough or can do more in order to help mitigate some of those issues that arise with the wildland-urban interface.
I think the city is doing a great job. There are two or three people in the fire department. It's a small little staff, but they're doing Herculean work. And it's called, I forgot what the name of it is, but they go into different neighborhoods and they will assess what your risk is. They'll come to your house by house help you do that. So I've had that come to my house and they looked at it. And there's a map and you can look at each property and they'll color you red, yellow, or green of what they think your risk is at the wildfires. And they'll teach you how to clean up your trees. I had a tree that is 2 feet from my deck. I thought for sure they were going to tell me to cut down. I was hoping they would. My wife and I have been arguing about that. They said, no, as long as you keep the branches, 10 feet up off the ground so you don't have that ladder effect. And the people that work there, they're hitting all those neighborhoods that are right up against the foothills. And they're doing a great job. And then they go out and they work with companies like Allstate. I mean, our neighborhood, 301 homes, got a $30,000 grant from Allstate a couple of years back to help with this wildfire or fire mitigation. And, the fire department came out, told us what we needed to do. They had contractors lined up. Allstate paid half. We paid half. And so I think the city is doing a really, really good job of educating the people that are most at risk how they can improve their properties.
You've been on council. This would be your second term. And, of course, all the districts are up for election this
right.
time around. Where do you see as perhaps where city council may have fallen short in the last 4 years or procedures or disappointments?
Well, I'll answer that in two areas, our role as council and then our role as the board of directors. So on council, the first 2 years I came in had been the third and fourth year of the Bach administration. And it was a very tumultuous relationship. Steve Bach had never held an elected position before. Like I said, I had 26 years in the government. I knew how the roles and missions, the checks and balances between separation of powers. And so there was a lot of fighting back and forth. There's no easy way to put it, between the executive branch and the legislative branch on what our proper roles and missions are. Under Mayor Suthers, that's all turned around. So while we have a cooperative council and a cooperative mayor, myself, Councilmember Strand, who is at large member, Councilmember Larry Bagley from District 2, who regrettably is not running for reelection, we met with Jeff Green, the chief of staff, and the deputy chief of staff, Brett Waters, pretty routinely all of 2016. And we went through charter and we went through city code, because our charter in a lot of places is either silent or pretty ambiguous. It says all executive powers belong to the mayor, all legislative powers belong to council. What does that really mean? And so we want to go down. We're working on going down and spelling that out of what is good for the city. There's some things that the president or the governor cannot do, such as introduce legislation, that we believe the mayor should be able allowed to. And so we're going to put in the code that says the mayor has a right to introduce legislation. There's some things that council, under the Bach administration, council was not allowed to do. Mayor Suthers believes, you know, recognize that that really is a legislative function. And so there's been a lot of good intake. So I think when council is in there, the first 2 years were sad because it was not defined. The roles and missions were not truly defined, but we're fixing that now. And that's one of the things. We're not there yet. We're pretty close. I'll be briefing this afternoon at our council work session, 6 or 7 ordinances that were the low-hanging fruit. But there's stuff that's coming down that we still need to meet on. And so that's one of the reasons I'm running in, is that's one of the things I want to carry forward. On utilities, you know, the question is, I talked about, I'm in favor of the ownership, but should council really sit as the board of directors of utilities? And in my 4 years, I campaigned 4 years ago that I thought it should be a separate board. In my 4 years, it's proven that if you have a separate board, people that were elected, but they got to be elected, cannot be appointed. They got to be still answerable to the ratepayers. But if you campaign on why you make a good utilities board of directors, those are different qualities than you're campaigning on why you would be a good council member. And we really mainly campaign on why we would make a good council member, and utilities is secondary. And so we've had some boards of directors where the council members did not trust a single thing that CSU staff was telling them. And we had other ones that would never question anything staff told them. Both of them are wrong. We need people out there that have the business savvy, that have run profit and loss centers, that know when to ask the next level of question. You know, they have a tried and true. In the military, you say go with your gut, you know, but your gut is based on the history of experience, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And we need that type of experience as a board of directors for utilities. It's a $1 billion a year corporation.
Finally, I guess, as you sit here as running for reelection, you know, 20 to 30 years in the future, what is your vision for the city of Colorado Springs?
Oh, you know, I'm just trying to look at what I can afford and, you know, and what I can offer in the next 4 years. I mean, not afford, what I can offer in the next 4 years. 30 years from now, I hope we're still not Denver. I hope we don't ever lose our small town. That includes our Western heritage, you know, and going back to the heritage. I hope we are do have some iconic things, though. Envision Shook's Run. I mean, we just passed that master plan back. That's going to be a 30-year master plan. But, you know, 30 years from now, we have this nice walkway, activity path with destination stops along the way, along the Shook's Run Canal, We could do the same thing with Monument Creek that flows through District 1, take more use of our waterways. Hopefully we have a very vibrant economy. We can capture, if not some corporate headquarters, some major regional things. But, you know, people come here because it's a great place to raise our families, because it's so close to the mountains. You know, I don't want a skyline that totally blocks out the view of the mountains. And so that's what I'm looking at. 30 years, I hope, and maybe the mayors won't agree with me on this, but I hope we never lose our small town attitude.
And just in summary, why should someone in District 1 cast a vote for you?
I believe that I have represented my constituents well. Make no doubt, this is a full-time job. And because I don't do anything else, I can devote that. So, you know, there's times I put in 60 hours a week, probably regularly well over 40 hours a week. So it is a full-time job. But since I'm able to devote the time, I get accused of being somebody that digs down into the weeds, but I do study every issue that I comes before me for a vote. I don't do the Nancy Pelosi, we got to pass it before we, so we know what's in it. I study every single issue. I try to look at what's good for the city, what's good for the existing neighborhoods. Again, as we bring in new development, it's got to make sure that it fits within the harmony of the existing communities. Protect your base, that's number one. So people accuse me of being a micromanager, but I've also been in the saying that, you know, I'm the hardest working most person that studies it the most, the issues the most. I ask the most questions. And that's a reputation I'm proud of, because I said I would listen, I'd study. And so I think I proved I worked hard for the citizens.
Councilman Don Knight, running for re-election in District 1. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.